I do want to introduce GR as a former Marine who worked for Intel as an engineer and is what's called an SME, which is a subject matter expert. And he was concerned about our country, as most of us were years ago, and began to audit the Constitution, the history, everything that feeds into it. After working with him over a year, I've seen a tremendous change in the thinking of our country, because it's not where we're supposed to be. Our country is on an inflection point. Our state is well over that point. And one of the things that you have been sent are 12 petitions, First Amendment petitions, for the people to go and do a grievance to their government in a peaceful manner. And I ask that you consider the resolution that you made and continue to work that path. There are about 12 other counties that are now becoming engaged. And they're starting to understand that the courts are not the place for people to address their grievances. You go to court for life, losing your life, losing your property, and losing your rights. The courts are not the jurisdiction over a contract or a compact of multiple people. It is the people in that contract and that compact that hold them to account. And when we understand that, it is not difficult to understand why the oath is so important. And I'm going to turn it back over to GR to bring that forward to help you understand what a foundation and a firm ground you're standing on. Thank you for your time.
Okay, so about 3 years ago, when I first sat down and presented to the Board of Commissioners in Stevens County, I basically said, we need to create a symbiotic relationship between the people's government and their legislators at the county level. And I'm sure that Mark and Greg, you kind of remember that conversation. And we started it off talking about the oath, that there's literally no difference between your oath, the state legislator's oath, and the federal legislator's oath, other than the fact that the federal legislators are not required in their oath to support the state constitution. So breaking down our Republican form of government, because I kind of started on that, and I think it's important to understand the chain of command in our government. The maxim that was established in the Declaration of Independence is, we the people institute our government. So therefore, when we the people institute our government, we create our community government. The Tory Acts actually proved this, as our forefathers started organizing themselves against the tyranny of the king in 1763. And so as they created their government, which is our counties, then our counties then create the state. And when we look at how all states joined the Union, this is precisely the process that was followed from all states past the original 13. See, the original 13 had a couple centuries almost of operating and existing, and they had to evolve away from the monarchical theocracy into this Republican form of government. So therefore, the counties create the states as all 47 other states joined the Union, and then the state legislatures, as we know, were the ones that sent delegates to the convention to create the federal government. So let's put a family architecture to this. We the people are the parents. Our child is our county legislators. Their child is the state legislators, and their child is the federal legislators. So in other words, the federal legislators are we the people's grandchild. And so when you look at the responsibility, even at a biblical level, the parents are supposed to correct their children. And then the children are supposed to correct their children, and so forth. So therefore, when we really start looking at the makeup of this Constitution Republic, I want everybody to understand that when the Constitution was being sold to the states, there was nothing within it that gave the federal government the ability to meddle in the state's form of government or political structure. Had this been in the Constitution, there's no doubt in my mind that the states would have rejected it, because they would have pointed their finger at the Constitution and said, see, our government isn't good enough. and that would have given them pause and cause to actually reject the Constitution. So the Constitution was given to us as an exemplar, which is why all 13 states ended up changing their form of government into bicameral legislative bodies and into basically the three branches of government, where you have an executive, the legislative has all the power, and the judiciary basically ensures that justice is being doled out. So Madison stated this at the very end of his report, and I'll get into his report a little bit later, but he stated this at the very end, and this is in 1800 when they were literally looking at the peril of this, what we will call the Alien and Sedition Acts, that they thought would be destroying the Union. And this is what he said: the authority of constitutions over governments and the sovereignty of the people over constitutions are truths which are at all times necessary to be kept in mind, and at no time perhaps more than the present. And I am here to tell you that understanding this today is even more important and is paramount, because today we're being attacked in so many different ways with the violations of the Constitution, and the only way to deal with this is by creating a Constitutional Compliance Committee, this assembly. And so therefore, by doing so, this is the shot that will be heard around the world, because we don't have to use brutal force anymore. Only the divine hand of providence knew what we'd be facing in these days, and he made sure we had everything in this Constitution. And I'm here to actually expose all of that to you. So as we look at the oath of office, and let's start with the oath of citizen first, because we all have a duty and responsibility to support the Constitution. And so when you look at this very beginning line, I hereby declare on oath that I absolutely and entirely renounce and abjure all allegiance and fidelity to any foreign prince, potent state, or sovereignty of whom or which I have heretofore been subject or citizen. I want you to understand this, that when a person takes this oath and they've come from Islam and the rule of law being Sharia law and the Hadiths, they're basically saying, I will no longer be a citizen of that. And we actually see how their oaths are absolutely empty. Technically, this is one of the reasons why Islam was banned by all of the states until the very end of the 19th century. They weren't allowed to be citizens. They weren't allowed to even migrate. And yet, look at today, we're actually, because we forgot about the importance of this oath, that they must support the Constitution. They should be, anybody that's calling for Sharia law in America should be stripped of their citizenship. And this isn't hyperbole. We're all required, so much so that it says here, I will support and defend the Constitution and the laws of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic, that I will bear true faith and allegiance to that same, that I will bear arms on behalf of the United States when required by law, and that I will perform non-combatant services in the armed forces of the United States when required by law, that I will perform work of national importance under civil direction when required by law. And that law must be laws that are in pursuance to the Constitution in supporting the Constitution, not supporting the president's agenda, not supporting the party, not supporting anything other than the Constitution. So you've got the citations there for that. Now let me dive into why this oath is so important. It was put into Article 6, and so it basically states in the Constitution, the senators and representatives before mentioned, and the members of the several state legislatures and all executive and judicial officers, both of the United States and the several states, shall be bound by oath or affirmation to support this Constitution. It was so important. It is paramount that I point out that the very first act of Congress, the very first act, June 1st, 1789, was an act to regulate the time and manner of administering the certain oaths. They couldn't get going and setting up the general, the counting office, or anything else until they knew what and how they all agreed upon in establishing the oath. And then later on, they started actually creating the standards of citizenship, as well as these standards and duties of the public servant. So let's get into this supreme law of the land and the rights and duties of the citizens, because after the Constitution was ratified, there was a gap, and Madison took it upon himself to ensure that the people had a Bill of Rights. And so when we look at the First Amendment, it says Congress shall make no law. But I'm here to tell you that the 14th Amendment changed that. Nobody actually goes in and makes any changes to the text of the Constitution. It's just super added, and you have to interpret. Or you actually not interpret. You actually have to amend it in your mind. But what I've done is I've done it for you. Because if you look at the second clause of Section 1 of the 14th Amendment, it says, quote, "No state shall make or enforce any law which shall abridge the privileges or immunities of a citizen of the United States," which means, as regarding the First Amendment, no government shall make no law abridging the right of the people to peaceably assemble and to petition the government. And when we talk about the government, they weren't talking about a judiciary form of government. They weren't talking about an executive or a bank or a corporate form of government or a party form of government. They were talking about a Republican form of government, which is why when you go through the annals of Congress, the Congressional Globe, the records of Congress, and so forth, you will see that the people always petitioned their legislators. As a matter of fact, going to the Tory Acts, you'll see that the people of the provincial governments, the committees of safety, the councils, conventions, assemblies, you'll actually see that they were petitioning the king for redress of grievances that their rights as Englishmen were being denied, which went years and years, and then we know the rest of the story because we revolted. But bottom line, it says that this right cannot be abridged. And we see governments around the United States giving the people only 3 minutes. Now, technically, if you're not providing a First Amendment petition, then you're not getting your rights abridged if you're just, excuse the expression, bitching and moaning. But if you're actually providing a petition for the redress of grievances, then that right to actually present that cannot be abridged. And that is the supreme law. So this is why they included this, to absolutely recognize the duty and obligation of the citizens to keep their public servants in obeyance to the supreme law, not to them, but to the Constitution. Because nowhere in your oath does it say that you're supposed to support the constituents. It says you're supposed to support the Constitution. So as we go down to the next point of this, and we look at the accountability, or actually the cursory of the 12 petitions, because actually Michelle brought this up. When you look at those 12 petitions, those are actual grievances of treaties, of the invasion, of very specific things that are violations to the Constitution. They're in your lap. If you want me to come up and actually present and provide a working class or a session so that I can go through and help you explain these things, then I'd be happy to do that. But I believe that we don't have time, considering where we are as a nation and the rhetoric and the direction that we're heading. Here is the oath that you've already taken, so I don't need to necessarily read this. You already know that you've taken the oath to support the Constitution. This following part is something I just want to skim over. I've told you how important the oath of office was. The first thing you need to understand is the citation of James Monroe. He was an anti-federalist. He actually voted against the Constitution, but he couldn't just be more, I'll just say, lauding and complimentary over this concept of having an oath. The other there were plenty, but I just gave you two out of North Carolina as well. If you want to read these, and you can actually see how these men recognized that this was a unique government that was actually going to be held accountable to an oath to supporting the supreme law of the land, being the Constitution. Now, believe it or not, when the Constitution was ratified, the Bill of Rights was provided, the Constitution still wasn't perfect. The framers couldn't even imagine that we would get to a point of moral turpitude where corruption would be so rampant. Only the divine hand of providence understood where this nation would be today. And so this is why, after the Civil War, it was Senator Howard from Michigan that actually made sure that Section 3 was placed into the Constitution. Now, most people have a real hard time reading this, and I want to tell you that when we look at the Constitution, and I want to provide you after this, the enumeration, a color-coded Constitution regarding enumerations within the Constitution, because the Constitution actually has different types of enumerations. There are roles and responsibilities for the federal government. There are roles and responsibilities for the states in the Constitution. There are powers that are enumerated in the Constitution. There's property, actually. The only property that the federal government can possess is enumerated in that Constitution. jurisdiction for criminal crimes is actually enumerated in the Constitution. Restrictions placed upon both the state as well as the federal government are in the Constitution. And standards, in other words, what it takes for a person to be in office, to be in the House of Representatives, 25 years of age, 7 years a citizen. The third section of the 14th Amendment is a standard that has been superseded to the Constitution. So let's look at this. It says no person shall be, and then I just have this, the rest of this yellow highlight, identifying the types of people who are under oath. And then it says, who having previously taken an oath, and then it reasserts that these people as in office, these public elected officials that are under oath to support the Constitution, who shall have engaged, I'm just injecting who, because this is about them, it's not about citizens, who shall have engaged in insurrection or rebellion against the same, not against the government, against the Constitution, who they've taken an oath to support, or given aid or comfort to the enemies of the Constitution or thereof, then they can't be in office. There is no line in here, no line whatsoever that allows the federal government to go through, or the state government or any government to go through due process for a person that has made themselves ineligible. You've made yourself ineligible, you're gone. You don't, they're not taking life, they're not taking property, they're not taking your liberty. By putting you in jail, you're just being removed from office. So to be clear, when we look at this, this is not about due process, it's about a standard. And so when these people who are actually violating, and by the way, it does not include the president, it includes the elector of the president and the elector of the vice president, the electoral college. So these people, other than the president, because they have an impeachment process for them, so these people have a standard now that they must, and actually there's the teeth right here. If you've committed, because this is how Senator Howard stated this in the debates in 1866. He said, if somebody under oath violates their oath, they've committed moral perjury, and I see no reason why they should be allowed to stay in office. This is why this actually changed from a punishment of those people. And after the Civil War, they wanted to punish those people of the South, or those legislators of the South, that conducted the insurrections, what they called it. But Senator Howard wanted to make sure, because technically they couldn't have actually passed that as a law. It would have been an ex post facto law. But what they did is they wanted to make sure moving forward, this could never happen again, that in America, all public servants will be, their eligibility for office will be held to this standard of living to their oath or fulfilling their oath of office. Now, to be clear, just want to kind of point this out. The establishment of a constitutional review or compliance assembly is the epitome of one under oath in supporting the Constitution, because this is where the truth is going to be established. And you actually, this committee or assembly is going to be doing your heavy lifting. They're going to be able to provide you all the academic source documents that will actually prove that there's only one Constitution, and it is the original Constitution in the language that we're looking at, not this annotated Constitution that the courts are creating and keeping, that they call the living Constitution. That's what they use, and that's not what we have as this government, and the Constitution doesn't even authorize them to do that, but I digress. I've got a citation from Isaiah regarding what the Lord pointed out, for as much as this people draw near me with their mouth and with their lips do honor me, but have removed their heart from me, and their fear towards me is taught towards the precept of men. We're seeing this with people in office today, that they give lip service to the Constitution, but they're actually shredding it. I don't want to even mention names of the federal government or anybody like that. Getting into defining support, here are the actual language out of the report and out of the resolutions from 1798. This is what Madison said. He says that this assembly does most solemnly declare its warm attachment, they're doing that by taking their oath, to maintain which it pledges all its power. Going on in the report, he actually clarifies what he's talking about. He says, the observation is just made and equally applicable to this solemn declaration of warm attachment, and this solemn pledge to maintain it, nor any question can arise among enlightened friends of the Union as to the duty of watching over and opposing every infraction of those principles which constitutes its basis. And so as we look at, because actually that was the language up above, it says, and oppose every infraction of those principles which constitute the only basis of the Union. In the next resolution, in the Virginia Resolutions of 1798, he states this, that in the case of deliberate and palpable or blatant and dangerous exercise of powers not granted by the said compact, the states or the parties thereof have the right and are duty bound. In other words, the legislators are duty bound to interpose for arresting the progress of evil. He actually goes through, and I don't want to really, this is a lot here to go through, but he lays out in the highlighted green bold letters a plain principle founded in common sense, illustrated by common practice and essential to the nature of compacts. What he is basically stating that I could state in just a few words, he's talking about contract law. That when it is defined in the contract, you must live by the contract. There is no interpretation of the contract. It is a black and white thing. And contract law is what is prevalent here. And this is what he says, that all where resort can be had to no tribunal superior to the authority of the parties themselves must be the rightful judges in the last resort, whether the bargain made has been pursued or violated. So when the federal government actually violates the Constitution, which they don't have authority to. Actually, the Supreme Court doesn't have the authority of jurisdiction over those things. Only the states have that authority. And we go through a little bit below this. I actually go through the authority of this, but let me just do this right here. The very last part of this stanza, or the paragraph, it follows of necessity that where no tribunal above the authority of the parties to decide in the last resort whether the compact made by them be violated, and consequently that as the parties to it, they must themselves decide in the last resort such questions as may be sufficient magnitude to require their interposition. Gentlemen, I'm telling you that this document, as well as four other documents that were written by Thomas Jefferson and James Madison, are five critical documents that everybody must really read to understand this responsibility of holding our government accountable to those powers enumerated, those powers granted in our constitutions, state constitution as well as federal. So if you get my view of support, I see the support as being like an immune system, that as the legislators, they're actually supposed to kick in first. But when the legislators fail to kick in, it requires us, and I said this in our first meeting, that we the people share the blood on our hands. We have failed to hold you accountable. That day has got to end. It is time to hold everybody accountable up the chain of command or down the chain of command, however you want to look at it. One of the things I want you to take time to look at is go read Washington's Proclamation for Thanksgiving. It was clearly a call to the nation to actually sanctify the Constitution by taking one day and serving him in giving service to the Lord. And that's how we sanctified the Constitution, by sacrifice or by service. So when we look at the federal court jurisdiction, the judicial power shall extend to all cases in law and equity arising under this Constitution, the laws of the United States, the treaties made or which shall be made under their authority. That's it. Then they go into the laws of the ambassadors and international law and so forth. So they don't have any, they have no authority to hear any case regarding property within the United States over parks, over even Indian reservations. If it's not enumerated, it doesn't arise under this Constitution. They don't have the authority. They've opened their doors like a revolving door, and they're actually assuming authority they don't have over all things under the sun, from CO2 to life, to the environment. Energy, all of these things do not arise under the Constitution. So as I've provided this, and I kind of gave you the Tory Acts before, you need to examine the Tory Acts, because this is exactly what they did. They assembled, they created a body that actually started petitioning and dealing with the problem of tyranny that was being unleashed upon them from the king, from Britain. We've been living under tyranny well over a century. It goes actually over two centuries. The government has been doing things that they don't have the authority to do. I even proved to you that the Department of Transportation is a direct violation. We had three presidents, Madison, Monroe, and Jackson, veto three congressional attempts to try to create just the footings of the Department of Transportation. So we've given you, and actually you created, after my last presentation a year ago, You created these resolutions, and we've given you the bylaws that can be easily amended by you. I don't understand why we're at this point, and so I think it's really important to try to highlight this, that I believe that there is a need for discovery, because we have to support the Constitution. If we have within our ranks those who are not going to stand up, I think the good people, the good to stand up for the Constitution, I think the good people of Stevens County need to know that there may be elected officials that are not willing to do their job. Because when you look at that legally binding oath, you're not bound to take a bond. There is no requirement for a bond to serve. That is an unconstitutional requirement. We can get into all of these types of things. And this is exactly what that committee will prove to you. They will actually take all these myths, these lies, and this deception and clarify everything for you so that you literally can actually become the leaders on this concept of Constitution compliance. So if we've got time, and I look at the clock, I don't have enough time.
We're running out of time here. I was just going to ask the guys if they had any questions for you before we go into our next meeting.
Yeah, so my question actually for you was, I was going to hope that today you could actually be the county that sends the shot around the world to be heard that demanding constitutional compliance is paramount. We're not going to put up for anything else. I yield, and I will answer any questions. Thank you so much.
You bet. I was just trying to read through some of these petitions right now here. Like I said, give us some time here to read through some of these. Like I said, I think it's going to spark more questions than I'm probably going to have for you. So I didn't know if these guys had any questions for you. Like I said, that they're quite in depth.
Yeah, so I'd only ask that you would let me know, because the state of Wyoming is actually moving very quickly. They will probably, if not here in Washington, they are probably the next that is a high likelihood of a county taking a stand and starting to hold their state legislator accountable, the legislature accountable. Stevens County has the honor. There you go. Any questions?
I see no reason to not make a motion to approve the bylaws of the Constitutional Review Committee.
I've got a motion.
I need more time. I have a lot more questions that J.R. Mobley brought up. I want to review what he put out to us today. And I wrote a lot of notes down. But this obviously is important. And I'm not going to say it's not important, because it really is. However, I need more time.
All righty then. I guess we've got a motion.
We've had a year to think about it,
right,
and review the bylaws. It can easily be.
Any discussions? Okay. Well, I think we.
All right. So let me just say this one parting thing, that I'm here to help, and I'm not from the government. And as we look at the relationship, if I can reemphasize, if we look at the relationship, we the people are the government. And we the people are beginning to wake up. And as Michelle said, there are other counties in the state. And I'm working across this nation. And I'm praying that it begins today. And the time is ticking when that first shot is being heard. And I was hoping that Stevens County would have the honor of being able to be, because the annals of history are being written, my friends, and everybody will see who did what, whether they stood up for the Constitution or whether they rolled over. Have a great day, and thank you so much for the opportunity to present to you the details regarding the sanctity of our oath in supporting this Constitution over all other things. God bless.
Real quick, I got people waiting on me.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. Proof of performance, when Tulsi Gabbard removed 37 people from the intel, is because they violated their oath. Right. That's how quickly it worked. And I think some of you have heard this example when Kristi Noem was governor in South Dakota and they wanted to pass Bitcoin, which we passed here in Washington State. The Constitution does not allow you to pay debt except backed by silver and gold. She vetoed it, and Both parties. This is not a party issue. It's a constitutional issue. It's bipartisan across the boards. they wanted to override that vote, and people who have been trained in this didn't even address their county legislature. It went clear to the state legislator and wrote them that if you do this, you will violate your oath to the Constitution, and the grand juries and such matters as the process will begin to remove you from office, and it stopped them because they did realize that their oath was important. Bob Ferguson is trying to break the Article 10, the Commerce Law, by getting a health alliance between four states. He's not being stopped. I had two counties, did all these initiatives that we passed as a people, and they violated their own law. And it does take time to get these things done. And if we don't start, and we didn't come to Stevens County because we see it as a small county that we can prey on. We saw a people who were enlightened and understood that had more than enough time to understand how good this is. And when you come into it, you're new and you're unsure. I can understand that, Mr. Stobart. But matter of fact is this state, and I'm a state committee woman, so I was at a state meeting, and I have a leading legislator that says if we bring these petitions to him, he will take them to Harmy Dillon. So the choice is yours.
Real quick.
It's just a comment. My name is Mike McKenna, just a resident here. And I think like a lot of other Americans, we just wonder as we the people, where does our power lay? Is it just we the people, or is there substance behind it? And we don't know. Americans don't know anymore. So as our representatives, please don't sit on this. Make this your top priority. Because if this is the way that's constitutionally bound and you took oaths for it, we need to start addressing and using the power of the people to get out from under the thumb of the king of the state.
And that is why I made the motion to approve the bylaws to move forward.
Yes, sir. And I understand that you need to look at it.
But in
I haven't heard all this. I just know
the bylaws. Isn't it set up a committee?
Yes.
In that committee, is it going to be a paid position?
No.
No.
Not going to be. How are you going to select the chairman of that committee?
Like any other committee, there would be appointments. And there would be a vote. And the chair would be selected.
So it starts at an appointment level.
It's pretty simple, really.
Mm-hmm. My fear, though, is another bureaucracy within. You all should be, all this declaration or not, you all should be following the Constitution, just as Mr. Mobley said. And we should already be doing these things. I think a convention of counties is probably a better way to attack things than all other.
Anyway, I'll set up another meeting. Like I said, it seems like we needed a whole lot more than a half hour here today.
Yeah.
Real quick.
I think we didn't hear enough about how this advisory council or committee would interface with the commissioners and implementation of the precepts that Mr. Mobley just spoke. How
right.
do we get that
the
to
process, basically.
It's been over a year ago. They
okay, well,
a resolution, so I'm happy to review.
Is that written down anywhere where the public can review?
It's been recorded.
Mr. Chairman, we need to move
okay,
on.
Okay, yep. Oh, all right. Thank you, everyone. We'll set up another meeting and try to get moving.
Amen. God bless.
All right, we're moving on to hunters now. It looks like I got my attorney, and who else I got? I got my public.